This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, May 17th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. It's been a banner year for cryptocurrencies as more banks and other major institutions invest in digital assets and their networks. Ethereum, in particular, has seen major growth, thanks in part to rising interest in non-fungible tokens, NFTs, and decentralized finance. But Ethereum's popularity has also exposed some challenges for the network and for cryptocurrencies more broadly. Our reporter Paul Vigna wrote the book on crypto, more than one actually, and he'll join us to explain all of that and talk about Ethereum's path forward. That's after these headlines. We report that Microsoft board members decided that Bill Gates needed to step down from its board in 2020 as they investigated his prior romantic relationship with a female Microsoft employee that was deemed inappropriate. People familiar with the matter said that the board tasked a law firm with conducting an investigation in late 2019 after it received a concern that Gates had sought to initiate an intimate relationship with an engineer in 2000. The people said that during the probe, board members decided that Gates should no longer sit as a director. Another person familiar with the matter said that Gates resigned before the investigation was completed. Microsoft confirmed the investigation and said it provided extensive support to the employee who raised the concern. A spokeswoman for Gates said the relationship ended amicably and that the decision to transition off the board was not related to the matter. The news comes after Gates and his wife, Melinda French Gates, announced earlier this month that they were ending their marriage after 27 years. Facebook lost a procedural court battle in the European Union. Last year, Irish regulators ordered the social network to stop sending European users' data to the U.S., saying the bloc had no effective way to combat American government surveillance of Europeans' data. Facebook had challenged Ireland's move in court, arguing that the regulator had moved too quickly. But on Friday, Ireland's High Court rejected those claims and sided with regulators. Ireland's order still needs to be finalized and approved. If it's put into effect, it could force Facebook to re-engineer its service to silo off most data it collects from European users, or to stop serving them entirely, at least temporarily. Facebook said it planned to defend its practices in court. Regulators welcomed the decision. That's the reaction at the Beijing Aerospace Control Center, as scientists confirmed that China had successfully landed a rover on Mars over the weekend. The achievement makes it the third nation to land on the Red Planet, after the U.S. and the Soviet Union. And it's a critical milestone for China's growing space program. The country has mostly had to go it alone, after the U.S. shut it out of collaborating with NASA in 2011. And the criminal ransomware group linked to the cyber attack that disrupted gasoline delivery on the East Coast has told associates that it's shutting down. According to security research firms, DarkSide said it had lost access to the infrastructure it uses to run its operation because of disruption from law enforcement and pressure from the U.S. DarkSide didn't respond to requests for comment. However, experts say it's not uncommon for groups like DarkSide to disband, only to pop up later under a different name. All right, coming up after the break, the Ethereum network is back on the map, but its return to the spotlight is also highlighting some challenges to its continued growth. That's next.
This podcast is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm you share something with, listening. They take the time to understand you and your business so you get the best solution, not more noise. Start a conversation at gt.com.
We've been following the continued adoption of cryptocurrencies, and while Bitcoin's growth has begun to slow, the second biggest network, Ethereum, has exploded. Over the past year, the price of its in-house currency, Ether, has jumped from $200 to hitting more than $4,000 this month, though it's come back down to around $3,500 more recently. Price aside, there are some serious challenges ahead for the Ethereum network. And so for more on this, I'm joined by our cryptocurrency reporter, Paul Vigna. Hey, Paul, thanks for being here.
Hi, Amanda. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I know it's a really big question, but for those who aren't familiar, what is Ethereum and how does it fit into the world of crypto?
The easiest way to think about Ethereum is it's basically an operating system. It's similar to Google's Android. It's similar to iOS, the system on your iPhone. It is a platform for hosting apps. The difference is that it is, quote unquote, decentralized, where with Android and iOS, you have a company that owns those and controls them. The Ethereum network is an open source software project. Nobody actually owns it. Nobody actually controls it. That is the real difference. Look, technically, it's much more complicated, but conceptually, it's really not much more complicated than that.
Okay, and so it follows that people can build applications on top of that Ethereum operating system. And they have been, clearly. It's been booming, as we mentioned at the top. Can you tell us about the rise of Ethereum and its currency, Ether? How did we get here?
So Ethereum launched in 2015. And it was a version of Bitcoin. It took the ideas behind Bitcoin and it repurposed them. Bitcoin was built as a network to support a currency. Ethereum was built as a network to support this platform for hosting apps. So it launches in 2015. It's a lot of excitement, but it never really took off. What happened over the last year is that a couple of big use cases exploded. That's what really happened. And you might have heard of at least one of them. One is called NFTs, non-fungible tokens. This is the one that has really kind of broken into the mainstream. A lot of people are talking about it. The NBA has their version of this called Top Shot. It got on Saturday Night Live. You know, everyone's talking about NFTs. NFT stands for non-fungible token. That means that it is basically a one-off Bitcoin. So in other words, you know, Bitcoin is a currency. There are 21 million units of it that will be produced. Every single one is exchangeable for every single other one. These non-fungible tokens, it's a token, but it's unique. There are only one is created at a time. That allows artists, creators, basketball leagues to create these one-off tokens and sell them. And I think, look, a lot of this, you have to keep in mind the backdrop of this is that we're in a situation where because of the coronavirus pandemic, you have had the world's central banks just, you know, flooding trillions of dollars worth of liquidity into the capital markets. You have basically free money. Everything is rising. There's a lot of speculation out there. And then you get a couple of new things coming along and they're small markets and people get excited. So they fly. So NFTs have gone, you know, totally ballistic. They're into the mainstream. They're very popular. All of it sits, almost all of it, sits on top of Ethereum.
So the explosion of NFTs is one use case that's behind Ethereum's rise. You mentioned two. What's the other one?
The other is called DeFi, decentralized finance. Essentially, DeFi is just traditional banking built in a decentralized manner. So you have people who are just taking, you know, I don't know, say a lending market, right? Or a borrowing market. You want to borrow someone's cryptocurrencies because you want to make a bet in the derivatives market, right? If you were in the traditional market, you would borrow stock. In the crypto market, you want to borrow cryptocurrency. So they're just building programs that automate sort of all the functions that traditional banks and Wall Street firms do. And they're running those on top of Ethereum. And that has become a huge market over the last 6 or 8 months. The total value is around $100 billion it's gotten up to. It's just, it has really taken off.
And to be clear, this latest boom is in some ways distinct from the broader rally in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, right?
Well, it's at the very least, it's concurrent. I mean, Bitcoin over the last year has gone, you know, crazy. Ethereum over the last year has exploded. Most cryptocurrencies have gone up. Everyone knows about Dogecoin. Dogecoin has gone, you know. I mean, this is within the entire cryptocurrency sector, this is a broad rally. But over the last couple of months, you have seen Ethereum continue to rise while Bitcoin has kind of leveled off. And Ethereum and Bitcoin are the two largest cryptocurrencies by a long shot. So those two have gone up a lot, but they've started to diverge over the last few months because they are basically, people are buying them for different reasons. When you buy Ethereum, essentially what you're buying is access to the Ethereum network. when you're buying Bitcoin, you are really buying Bitcoin because that is an asset that you think is going to appreciate in value, or you want to hold it as a hedge against inflation, whether inflation ever actually comes or not. You know, you, in both cases, you're speculating, but you're kind of speculating for different reasons. And over the last month, we have seen a divergence in the price of the two, at least in the rate of acceleration.
Got it. And so, and looking to the future here, I think as we've witnessed the growth in other cryptocurrencies, there have been concerns about things like volatility and regulation or lack thereof. What challenges are on the horizon for Ethereum?
The biggest challenge for Ethereum, and it has had this challenge really from the start, is the ability for the network to scale, the ability of the network to support millions and millions or hundreds of millions of users. It can't do that right now. It's pretty much at capacity, and it's been that way for a couple of years now. They've been trying to upgrade the software. They've been trying to put in some new solutions that will fix that. They have more planned over the next year or so. But this is the biggest problem, is network congestion. Because what happens is you have millions of users come onto the platform. They all want to use it because it can only process X number of transactions at any given time. What ends up happening is the transactions get slowed down. The program itself, whatever program you're hosting, moves slowly, and the fees for using that network go up. On all these crypto networks, they all carry very small fees for access that are generally supposed to be low, but they sort of set themselves automatically depending on how much traffic there is on the network. Think of it like a toll. The difference is on a highway, the toll is the same for every single car. On Ethereum, if there are a lot of cars, the tolls go up. So these fees can spike. I think the high was $38 for a transaction, for a single transaction. That's a real problem for a lot of people. It destroys the user experience. You know, oh, you bought this thing. Oh, by the way, here's a $38 fee that you couldn't predict and it just happened to hit you. So it really drives people crazy. And for that reason, the most popular NFT, the most widely sold one, is the NBA's Top Shot. And the company that created that in conjunction with the NBA, called Dapper Labs, they built their own network for it. It doesn't run on Ethereum. It runs on something they built called Flow for Top Shot and for some others that they have, because the Ethereum network just couldn't handle the amount of traffic. If Ethereum can't figure this problem out, there's going to be more of that.
So what does the future look like for Ethereum? What's going to determine whether it succeeds or whether it fails?
The really big thing for all these networks, the Bitcoin network, the Ethereum network, any others that come along, is really the users. How many users do you have? Do you have a community of users? Do you have a network effect where it has gotten so large that it becomes self-sustaining? Bitcoin, to a large degree, has that. Ethereum, is very close to building that. And that is going to be the real determiner of how these things go. It's really not the technical side of it. Yes, it has to work. And the user experience has to be good and it has to be smooth and all that stuff. But that stuff on its own is not the real factor. The real factor is the name recognition, how many people use it, how many people are on it, how many people get hooked onto it. I mean, companies know this. Apple knows this. Microsoft knows this. Google knows this. They bring you in, they hook you on their products. They get a lot of people using them to the point where it is just, it's more hassle than it's worth for you to go use something else. That is the kind of thing I'm talking about. Like, once you get a network effect of people using it, it really becomes a disincentive for any other competitor to come along, try to scratch away at that. So that's the biggest issue. That's the biggest factor right now, is just how many people can they hook on their products.
All right. That's our crypto reporter, Paul Vigna. Thank you, Paul.
Yep. You're welcome, Amanda.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.